This is Danielle Fishel.
And Ryder Strong from Pod Meets World.
When you have 5 and 7-year-old boys, I can promise you they love superheroes.
Oh, it never goes away. Indy is 11 years old and he's obsessed with comics, cartoons, video games, all of it.
Adler and Keaton both have Spider-Man costumes, and if anything says Marvel on it, they are in.
Same. Which is why we love Lingo Kids. They have Marvel Spider-Man activities that are totally age-appropriate.
And safe. Made just for the little ones.
Plus, Disney's Moana, Frozen, Zootopia, all the characters your kids already love, and a few you're secretly hoping they'll get into.
I just load up the iPads with Lingo Kids before a trip, and with over 4,000 interactive activities, songs, and shows, it keeps their attention for hours.
Download Lingo Kids for free or go all in with Lingo Kids Plus for even more incredible content.
Choose the yearly plan and save up to 60%. Search Lingo Kids in the App Store or Google Play.
Lingo Kids, everything kids love.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
He's certainly young in comparison to me, and as a young, I feel up and coming and very bright coach, and we are confident that he is the guy to cultivate a winning culture in our locker room. I really like John's resume. Nothing has ever been given to him. He went to Boston University. He played in four Frozen Fours at college. He won a title in 1995. For three seasons, he was a teammate and roommate of assistant general manager Jeff Kelty. So he's got a good relationship there for sure. He started his coaching career immediately after college, serving as an assistant at BU. Players like Chris Drury were on that team. Then he moved on to a role with the U.S. National Team Development Program. And then he went to the University of Wisconsin as an assistant there. I believe he met his wife there.
Yes, correct.
He's got a wife, and he's got three girls. All hockey coaches seem to have three girls. Yeah. Seems to work that way. But John's never been given anything after Wisconsin. To get into professional hockey, he took a job as assistant coach at Wilkes-Barre, which is the Pittsburgh's organization. And I think he, from a standard of living or what have you, I think he took a substantial cut to do what he wanted to do, to get into pro hockey, to prove that he could be a good up-and-coming coach. He got promoted there at Wilkes-Barre to head coach, and then eventually when Ray Shiro, former assistant general manager with the Predators, got the job in New Jersey, he hired him in New Jersey. As you know, I'm very close with Ray, and I'm very close to Ray's assistant, who is Tom Fitzgerald, who is the first captain of the Nashville Predators, and they had... I knew a lot about John talking to other people, but boy, did they ever put this overboard in terms of what they thought of John and what he could do for us as a coach and what his potential was. So I really feel we're getting John at the right time of his career, not unlike other coaches that we've had here. When they get more opportunities, they get more experience, I think they thrive on the next opportunity. So it's never a perfect time to come into a club. John arrives here today without any practices, without any conversations with any of our players, but we're going to figure this out together. We've also brought in Rob Scuderi, who you might know has been on we just hired in our development team this year. He's got won two Stanley Cups with LA and Pittsburgh. John knows him from past relationships in hockey, and I think as a former player, probably the closest age to our players and closest to having just played will be a good addition to our coaching staff. So I'm really excited about this change. I'm really excited for giving John this opportunity. And without further ado, John, I'd like to present you with our Nashville Predators jersey for a photo op. There's our logo. There's your name, 2020. I won't make you put that on right now. Yeah, we're good. Okay.
All right, thank you.
John, go ahead.
All right. Well, thank you. It's great. It's great to see everybody here today. And I'd just like to start out that it's an honor to coach in the National Hockey League and serve in the National Hockey League. There's only 31 of us at any given time, and it's a demanding job, and they're very difficult jobs to attain. So I certainly feel privileged again to get a tremendous opportunity here. I'd like to thank David Poyle, the hockey ops staff, Sean Henry, and the executive team for this opportunity and going through the process and believing in me. I certainly am very excited to get working with the players and the team. I'm very excited to be able to work with this team, you know, having the opportunity to coach in the league and coach against Nashville and have a lot of prior relationships with people that know David and Jeff Kelty and the organization in general. They put together an excellent hockey team. It's very talented. It's well built. There's a lot of different dimensions. And it comes from an extremely successful tradition. And, you know, that's my job as the coach and the coaching staff, along with the players, to try to maximize the talent that we have on the team and get ourselves to be an extremely competitive team here the rest of the season. The Nashville job's special. You know, the opportunity to work for the tradition here, the fan base here is unbelievable. When you come in as an opposing team, you know, you really know that it's going to be an energized building. The atmosphere is fantastic. The fan support for the players and the team and the community is second to none in the NHL. And even as a road team, it's extremely exciting building to play in. It's a difficult building to play in, so I can only imagine what it's like when you have the whole building on your side, and I'm certainly excited for that. And a couple other things when I wound up getting the job, very excited to come here, obviously with the country music, so huge Luke Bryan fan. And when I took the job, my older daughter, who is 14, was tremendously excited and said, Luke Bryan lives in Nashville. That's going to be fantastic. So really excited for that. And the other part I just want to say is I'm from Rhode Island, and I was a huge Patriots fan. But as of last Sunday, go Titans. I'd say in closing, you know, I do have a wife and three young daughters, and they're certainly really excited to be able to come to Nashville, and we're excited to get them immersed in the community and really looking forward to working with our team and really getting settled in and getting our team going very aggressively here the second half of the season.
John, what's the process of acclimating yourself? I mean, we have a game tonight. How do you work yourself in, or is this just kind of a slow process to get to learn theirs?
Well, I think for the first day, because I arrived this morning, we did have a brief meeting with the players, and I think it's important for them that they have a lot on their minds too, and we will not change much today. I think it's important that they go with their regular routine. Both assistant coaches are going to run the special teams meeting as they have done. I had a meeting with the players this morning. I'll address them again prior to tonight's game, and I think it's really important that they're prideful guys, and they understand that you know, two very good men and two very good coaches are no longer with us, and you know, we have to come out tonight with energy, competitiveness, and really get our mentality and identity back in our game.
John, how would you describe your offensive and defensive philosophies at 5-on-5?
Well, 5-on-5, I like to have a strong attack mentality, and I think when you look at our team, it's trying to play fast. So we want to get up and out of our zone as quick as we can. We want to be able to manage the puck through the neutral zone with speed. I think when you look at the decor, there's excellent skaters. They can join the rush. So you do have the opportunities when you have time and space through the neutral zone to have a four-man attack. In the offensive zone, we like to be very aggressive with an aggressive forecheck. Really, you know, we have a phrase, we want to fight for middle ice. We want to have strong middle lane drive. We want to have a shot mentality, strong net front presence, five guys involved in the offense. And, you know, we're going to try to promote a lot of what we would call a half ice game, where you have a lot of offensive pressure, you manage the puck, you're getting to the inside of the ice, and then if the other team chips it out, there's a quick up re-attack, and we can be right back in that area of the ice. And I think defensively it's about a five-man commitment. You know, defensively there has to be strong structure, there has to be good habits, there has to be five men working as a unit. You know, offensively, a lot of times there's a little bit more creativity and things that you can do, but when you don't have the puck, it has to be structure and commitment and five guys doing their job.
What is your diagnosis from afar of this team, whatever you've seen of it, and why it's been inconsistent this year?
It's a good question. You know, when you look, I think Peter did a good job. I'm excited to come in. I think he's a very good coach and he's done a good job. You can see just some inconsistencies in the game from afar, but I think what the encouraging thing for me coming in is there's pockets and times and even particular games that you see Predator hockey, which is a difficult team to play against. They can put the other team on the heels, and it just seems that over the course of time. There's either been pushback in the game that the team hasn't responded overly well to, or some mental mistakes. And I think those are things that we're going to try to rectify. And also, there's got to be some better. I think there's some guys in the group that we really want to try to elevate their play.
David, Peter had been to five playoffs in 5 years. John, one playoff appearance in 4+ years in New Jersey. Maybe outside of the resume, what did you see, and how do you compare that with the resume in New Jersey from his one step there?
Well, I don't think it's fair to. I mean, Peter Laviolette has been with as much, way more experience. I mean, in comparison to John, I think, right there, there's a huge difference. And as I said to you earlier, I mean, our franchise was a huge debt of gratitude to Peter Laviolette for the job that he's done here and for all the wins that we have and the playoff appearances or what have you. I think John is one of the best young coaches in the game, up and coming, and I think his resume is just getting built. And, with New Jersey, can't, and I don't want to go into their situation, but they were in a way different place than we were. I'm thinking that we're getting John just at the right time, where he's coached at the college, the U.S. program, in the minors, all these things, and he's got a base in the National Hockey League. And we've talked about these things. There's things that I'm sure he would say that he would do different again. And now he's got the chance to do it with a different team. Our team, our age. Our competitiveness is way different than the New Jersey Devils. So I think we've got the best young coach that's out there on the rise. He's just getting into the prime of his career.
John, you spoke with some of the players, and there are a lot of them don't know you personally, but described you as a no-nonsense kind of guy. But for you, speaking for yourself, what's your personality as a head coach?
Well, I think I really like to communicate when it's time to work. We'll work. I do believe in being very direct in your message, where there's not a lot of gray area in how we're going to play or how we want to do things. Practice-wise, when we do practice, that you want to have attention to detail and strong pace, and you're really executing what you want to do. I think around the game, there has to be a certain level, of intensity and focus that you need to have. But in the players' lounge, on the plane, around, easy to talk to. I do like to socialize. I got a life outside of the game, and I think that's when you talk to players that have played under me. There is an intensity and directness, but there's also a human side that you understand that even the players are humans too, and it can't be hockey nonstop.
John, when you look at the Predators roster, you mentioned before about certain players, and David mentioned this as well, needing to elevate their game. When you look at the roster, which players come to the forefront in terms of the ones that you want to elevate the most?
Well, I don't think that I'd like to get into specifics on that first. And the only reason why I say that to you is I haven't had an opportunity to talk to individual players yet. So it's not fair for me to mention that. But I think in general, the job is the reason why we're in the situation we're in is we have to elevate the performance of the team. And to elevate the performance of the team, you have to have strong performances individually. And I think over the course of, in short order here, we have the game tonight. We'd like to see the response that the players are going to have and the competitiveness that we want to play with. It's a clean slate for the players, which is a bonus for them. But every game you play, there's an evaluation. And, I think from there, over the next few days here, we'll be able to meet with guys one-on-one, and that way everyone's on the same page.
Do you have any familiarity with anybody on the roster? I haven't had a chance to look at it, but has any of these guys kind of maybe had an interaction with them or
Jared Tenorti I had at the U.S. program, and Rocco Grimaldi was in the U.S. program. I didn't particularly coach him, but he was in it, so I'm familiar with those guys. And then I've seen Duchesne, Turris, particularly over at the World Championships when I was with Team USA. So I have a lot. I don't know a lot of the players personally yet, but I have come in, coached against guys, been in, you know, World tournaments, World Cup tournament, things like that, where you kind of bump into guys in the hotel and things like that. But that's one of the things I'm really looking forward to, is that, you know, there isn't a lot of prior relationships, and I think that, you know, sometimes that's a good thing.
Time to take over and kind of instill what you need to before the second half of the season starts?
Well, that's going to be the challenge. I think, you know, we're on the run. We have, I think, six games basically between now and the break. So, you know, as I said, I think that the team has a lot of positives that they do. I think that they're well coached. They're well structured. I think there needs to be tweaks, on certain things that we'll go through. But I think it needs to be a bit of a slow process. I think the most important thing is trying to maximize, you know, the players mentally, physically, get them to play at a higher level, and I think over the course of that time we'll be able to make some slight adjustments. But the players can't overthink. It's a good group of players. They're very competitive. We got to get them to play that way.
John, what are you going to do differently in Nashville that you didn't do in New Jersey?
Well, I think it's a situation of two different teams. I think one of the most important things you have to do is really understand what the makeup of your team is, and then how that team needs to be able to play, maximize the talent, and also try to put players in situations regularly that they're going to be able to thrive in and benefit in. And I think if I just shop and compare the two, that, you know, in New Jersey, it's a great young team. We had an excellent organization, but we're rebuilding. And when you're rebuilding, lots of times there's turnovers, or guys are just getting into finding out what type of players or what impact they can have in the NHL. And I think when you look at Nashville, there's guys that you know what they are, and now it's about putting them in situations that they earn, that they can succeed in, and then trying to maximize the way that they can play.
Have contact with David regarding this opening?
Just about a day ago.
Anything else?
Yeah, one. You talked about talking to Ray Shiro and Tom Fitzgerald and the endorsement they gave John. Mm-hmm. What specifically did they like about John? And if they liked John so much, why did they make the choice to move on from John?
Well, I can't answer the second part. But on the first part, just everything, his personality, his way he gets along with people, his staff, the players, the relationships. But having said that, as John just said, he's very firm. There will be no gray area. Everybody will know what their role is. When there's things that need to be corrected, he will correct them. And I think that New Jersey's loss is our gain.
John, of course, Jared has said that, eliminating mistakes and the physical hockey he wants to get back to. Of course, there's some hours left before tonight, but, you know, think about what is the message to not only just Jared but the rest of the team about eliminating the mental mistakes but also getting back to the physical hockey.
Well, I think with the mental, you know, with the mental mistakes, is you have to be tough to play against. And when you're tough to play against, it's really in two areas. There's your work ethic, your competitive level, the physicality of the game. But there's also another part of being tough to play against is your mental focus and little things. It's penalty discipline. It's good line changes. It's not icing the puck. It's understanding your assignments on faceoffs. You know, it's understanding the momentums of the game, shift after goal against. Those components, you know, I think really have to be emphasized. And tough to play against isn't just all physical. Good teams are physically tough, but they're also mentally tough and mentally sharp, and that's something that we'll address with the players.
Coach, you mentioned it in your opening remarks, but I'm curious how you view everything else that comes with being a head coach off the ice with the fan base and the community, that sort of thing, and how you see it in this position.
Oh, it's a real important part of the job, and it's an honor to be a head coach. I think at any level, it's certainly an honor to be a head coach in the NHL, and you know, particularly in Nashville, it's you know, when you look at the fan base, the community, the state itself, it's exciting, and I take a lot of pride in that. I think it's your job as a player or coach or, you know, someone in the NHL that has influence, can help with change, can reach out to people and communities. That's all important, and that's part of what coaching is. And when I get into coaching, it wasn't just to coach hockey. It was to coach people and try to help people get better and be able to make an impact, whether it's on a team or a community or a staff. And that's how I look at my job as a head coach.
Thanks, everybody. Help yourself to lunch in the back, and we hope to see you all tonight.
All right, there you go. John Hines introduced to everybody. We will come back and discuss some of the things you heard right here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game. All right, it's been an interesting 2.5 hours here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, here live at Pete and Terry's Tavern. The news coming down yesterday afternoon at around 5:35 p.m. that Peter LaViolette and Kevin McCarthy would no longer be, their coaching duties would no longer be needed here with the Predators, which created quite the stir. Say the least.
A little bit. Just a little bit of a stir.
I would say that 99% of the population in this market was not expecting that news at 5 p.m. yesterday. And then since we've been on the airwaves the last 2.5 hours, we've talked about that. We knew that John Hines was going to get sworn in as the new Predators coach, third coach in franchise history. You just heard from John Hines. What did you think?
Look, I thought he said all the right things. I mean, he seems in the short time that I got to hear him speak, personality-wise, like somebody that's going to be easy to get along with and you know, deal with from a media standpoint. I thought he answered the questions truthfully, and when he was asked about this team and systems, he's like, I've barely talked to the team. I mean, I had a meeting with him this morning. I'll meet with him again before the game, but he said for tonight, you know, I got to play here in a few hours. It's going to be pretty much status quo because there's just not much you can do to change things in a short amount of time. He's got to evaluate. He's got to see what he has in players. He doesn't know this roster. But so I thought he was honest. I thought David Poile was very honest about a lot of things, which is
no surprise to this show. That's
no,
for sure.
No, not at all.
Because we chat with him every Tuesday and, you know, David Poile has been very, very candid on this show.
Yeah, and that's what I like about him. And, look, it's time to be that way. Like this, in a situation like this, you have to be candid. You can't beat around the bush. And that's why I have, on the shows we did last night, I mean, I asked Robbie Stanley flat out, like, did Peter LaViolette lose the locker room? I think he did. I think the message just wasn't being heard. Now, when you hear the phrase, lose the locker room, you automatically think, oh, they turned on him, it's bad. Sometimes the message just doesn't get heard anymore. And so I kind of feel like that's where they're at. Now John Hines has to go in and try and deliver a new message and tweak some things. He's going to allow Dan Lambert and Dan Muse to work in their current roles, but they're going to continue to have three assistants on the bench. Rob Scuderi, a longtime NHL defenseman who has been in this organization as of this year, will be an assistant coach as well. So I like that addition because now you have Dan Muse, who has been here for a few years. Dan Lambert, this is his first year. And then you have two outside voices that are coming in and bringing in new ideas. So I like that. And I know Scuderi, you know, has been around this year. But I like the idea of having some different looks at things. And so we'll see if they can get it turned around. But as I said with Willie when you were downstairs, it's got a tough test tonight. It's not going to just automatically, oh, Peter LaViolette's gone, it's going to get fixed. It's not how this works. You're going to have to be a little bit more patient just through this process. And I think David Poile knows that. I liked that he used the phrase that everything kind of resets now.
Yep.
And his evaluation process resets. And he can look at this team and see what he needs to do. And some of these players that we have been talking about that need to step up, now's the time.
You know, we sat there on the field for two straight days at the Winter Classic, the Cotton Bowl in Dallas. Mm-hmm. And I thought we had fantastic coverage. So congrats to our entire team that was there, the radio station. We delivered at the Winter Classic, especially on New Year's Eve. We were in afternoons.
Yep.
We did 2 to 6 that day. We had the who's who come by. David Poyle even popped by before they were going to go out on the ice and do the team picture. That day, the day of the game, we had fantastic coverage for hours on end leading up to pregame. And then we had the broadcast. And then me and you did the postgame show.
Yep.
We sat there and some of the things that we talked about. And so it was all good, right? Everything felt 85,630. It was the Winter Classic. It was New Year's Day. It's kind of like a new leaf. You are. You're literally turning over the calendar, and that was the feel. But also, with all that good, we sat there and we talked about, man, with all that good, and it was 95% good. The 5% bad was obviously the results and what kind of took place in that game. It was interesting to hear David Poyle say that his mind had been made up at the Winter Classic after the, you know, that patch of about 8 minutes, the end of the second period, the six and a half, about the minute, last minute and a half of the second, first six and a half of the third, that 8 minute patch completely derailed the Winter Classic and how they played. And we talked about in postgame those. It's too many times we're talking about these.
And it's always
these patches
yep.
Right? And they cannot recover. Something that stood out, and I know we didn't get into it a ton, but it certainly stood out to us that Peter Laviolette, when the wheel, you could feel it. I mean, we were there. We're right there ringside. You could feel things were turning and going the wrong way.
Right.
Peter Laviolette calls a timeout early third period. Usually he likes to preserve that timeout. Thought it was a good timeout, right?
Yep.
At that point, it was
time to do it. Yep.
To settle things down. It was
2-2.
It was 2-2. It's time. Okay. And what happened after the timeout? They came right out.
Yep.
Get a penalty, power play goal, and the next thing you know, two more goals are tacked on.
And Dallas wins it 4-2.
Yeah, and Dallas wins 4-2. And Anaheim, they battled back. They get down. They battle back with two third period goals. They tie it up at 4. And late in the game with, about 2.5 minutes to go, they take too many men on the ice penalty late in the – now, it didn't end up biting them in the you-know-what. But those are just things that – I got to be honest, that's a little bit alarming. Like, because somebody has to take the blame for that, right? Like, somebody has to – whenever you're in a funk or you're inconsistent and you're up and down and you're up and down, things like this, they get magnified. And I did. I sat there and I'm like, too many men on the ice with 2.5 to go after you've done all the – and the power play – the penalty kill, as we know, has not been good.
I mean, they both have not been
good.
And
you took a penalty, too many men on the ice, late right. in a game that's tied 4-4 after you've made this unbelievable comeback. That really stood out to me.
Yep. And that's where discipline comes in. And, you know, that's where I think Peter Laviolette – was probably trying to change so much and change his delivery to see if it would be received better and that he'd be listened to, and it just wasn't working. I think everything he threw at it just wasn't working. And I look, that's frustrating. It's frustrating for everyone, but I thought it stood out to me that David Poyle basically said that he made the decision after the Winter Classic and knew this is the direction he was going to have to go. And he addressed his phrase of, I'm not contemplating any coaching changes at this time. And I thought he was very honest in saying it's day to day, because it is. It has to be. You can't go week to week. You can't go month to month. It literally has to be day to day and game to game. And if you look at the overall body of work of this team this year, it has been inconsistent and nothing has gotten fixed. You see flashes and you feel good. You go on the road and take 7 of 8 points, like, okay, all right, things are turning around. And then come back and lay an egg and lose 3 in a row, including the Winter Classic. It just, you can't have that up and down and expect to be competitive in the playoffs. They could make the playoffs. This team could limp into the playoffs, but it wouldn't be fun in the first round.
David Poyle also talked about that it wasn't just the Winter Classic.
Yeah.
Right? That's when
No.
This, so going back to these are, you know, now we're kind of going through the chapters of the book, right? Now we're trying to connect all of the dots. Let's see. They've gone through a year of them being the most penalized team in the league.
Yep.
We talked about it all year, right? All year. Nothing changed.
Yep.
went through a year of worst power play.
Yep.
What's wrong with the power play? What's wrong with the power play? Power play discussed the entire year. Nothing changed.
Nothing got fixed.
Right?
Yep.
Worst power play unit in the league. Now, penalty kills not working. There seems to be this theme where things have gone off the rails, and we discuss. It has to be frustrating because everybody's trying to fix it. The problem is things that we're bringing up, they weren't getting fixed.
Right.
I think that's a problem. When David Poile brings up the past, I think these are some of the things he's thinking about because somebody has to take the blame for that, right? I mean, those were all year long problems that over 6 months never got fixed. And this year, special teams hasn't gotten any better. The penalty kill has been the one thing this franchise, basically for the entire time, has been able to hang their hat on. Penalty kill has always been good. From the last two seasons, it's been sixth best in the league.
And they just can't seem to figure it out. And you change, you know, the assistant coaches of who's in charge of what. You bring in Lambert. And at the end of the day, it's just none of that is working. So that's why you have to do this. I mean, it's as simple as that. But the penalty kill has been baffling. I mean, special teams in general. But because the power play started off looking so much better and everybody was like, yeah, here we go. They're moving the puck.
They're the bottom of the league.
Right.
I mean, it's special teams really has been.
And you can't.
Last year, by the way, you could make a case that the power play and the problems that we discussed all year was a big problem in the playoffs, in the loss to Dallas. They went 0-for.
Yeah, right.
They went 0-for with the man advantage against the Stars.
It was like 0-for 12?
15. I thought it was 15, right?
Yeah,
was it 0-for 15?
It was double digits. I know that.
I think it was 0-for 15.
But you cannot have those types of lapses, and that's just kind of where they're at. And so John Hines, it's now his team, his voice, his reign, so to speak, and we'll see what he can put together.
John Hines was also asked specifically when he talked about elevating players. I did think this was the right answer because obviously you're not going to get into this publicly. He said the right thing. It was a good question to say, well, you talked about elevating players' games. Can you be more specific? Which players would you like to see their game elevated? And he said, you know, what you expect him to say.
Right.
I'm not going to get into it.
He doesn't know the team.
Like, it's not fair. I just got here.
Yeah.
But obviously we're sitting here talking about a new coach. So he said it's more about the team needs to be elevated because we're sitting here talking about a new coach.
Right.
I thought that was a good answer. I think obviously a lot of people, we've certainly discussed it on the show. I think everybody knows the answers to them, right? I mean, if you've been watching this team this year, you know the answer to that.
I would say if I'm being completely fair, you need to give him the next 2 weeks to evaluate because that's six games. Six games is a pretty good sample size to look at the team and see what he has. So Boston, at Chicago, at Winnipeg, at Edmonton, and then back here for Anaheim and Buffalo. That'll get you to the middle of the month. By the time they're done against Buffalo, that's before the All-Star break. They then get to the All-Star break. He should have a better idea of what he has and what this team looks like. That's kind of how I look at it. And then after six games, if, you know, he sees some things that he needs to tweak, move some players around, David Poile can, you know, obviously do his part, that's when I think you go into full-on evaluation mode. Because keep in mind, people, we're not to the All-Star break yet. That is, even though we have passed the midway point.
But this is also, tonight is the second half of the season.
I understand.
And that's when kind of the...
But the All-Star,
the All-Star break
is kind of that unofficial.
Yeah, true. But I think, to me, always the midway point is, okay, now you're past the midway point. Now it's start to say the second half is about a push, right?
Yeah.
It's about things have to get going in the second half of a season.
Yeah, no, it's go time. But I do think you got to give him a handful of games, and the next six games to me fit in that category of to evaluate because he doesn't know this team. He doesn't know the roster. He knows them from afar.
It's something we really haven't touched on a lot Chase, and I'll be very curious to see if this changes tonight. And I realize tonight is probably not a great gauge because it's his first game. He's just been here. He is. Yeah. He's got to learn the room. They've got to learn him. It's the Bruins.
Yeah.
They're one of the best teams in the league. They just beat the Bruins in Boston, so they're going to be, you know, exceptionally angry. But something we haven't touched on a lot that I wonder if that factored in a little bit to this too, because there's a lot of pride in this building we're staring at right now. There's a yeah. lot of pride in this fan base. You heard John Himes talk about, right, Hines, talk about that building, how difficult. Yeah. He's come in on the other side.
Right.
He said, even as the opponent, you get charged up because of the energy in the building. It's just, it's a great hockey vibe. It's a great atmosphere. They got to get that back.
Yep.
That thing is sold out every yep. night. What we're staring at right now, it's sold out every night. It's loud every home game. They got to get rolling again at home.
And
there's been just too many times over the last year and a half people have walked out of this building.
Well,
yeah, they had a good time, but you know, there's just been too many of the Dallas Stars game.
You don't want to watch 3 weeks ago uninspired hockey.
Yeah.
That's what they've seen.
Where they've just walked out going, what just happened?
Right.
Like, it's one thing to lose in overtime,
sure.
you know, tough losses, but there's just been too many times people have walked out of the building going, gosh.
Yeah.
Would have liked to have seen them show up tonight.
We've seen games where they've lost that have been close and they've been in it. You know, sometimes the puck just doesn't bounce your way. Puck luck. But they've played well. Pecorine's played well. And you walk out here and you're going like, man, wish they'd won that. But you know, the effort was there.
Yeah, what like, a great game.
What a great game. Didn't go our way, but that happens. There have been times where it's like, what is that?
Like that second period, like four
what
goals.
What am I watching?
What just happened?
Right.
I want to talk to you about the good folks at USS, United Structural Systems. It's a foundation repair and waterproofing company that has served our area since 1994. And I know I'm talking to a lot of homeowners out there, a lot, here in Middle Tennessee. They've got over 18,000 satisfied residential customers. 18,000. Chase, do you know how many people is a sellout in the Bridgestone Arena right here where we are?
17,113.
There you go. That's more than a sellout
yeah.
here at Bridgestone Arena. And they're proud of that. So if you've got bricks maybe that are starting to crack, or you've got cracking going on in your walls out there, you need to take notice of that. Walls bowing, doors or windows sticking, drywall separating, stair step cracks in your masonry, mortar joints, maybe your chimneys are tilting or leaning. Look, these are all signs that maybe or maybe not something is going on. But if something like this is happening, you probably need to get it checked out. Your house is probably telling you something. Well, that's where USS comes in, because they're going to come out, give you a free estimate. I've just told you they're locally owned. They're licensed and insured, and they care about their reputation. They care about the quality of work that they bring you. They care about sending you out somebody who has expertise, can tell you exactly what's going on, and they have integrity. And I don't know about you, but that's appealing to me. That certainly gets my attention. If you've got something like this going on at your house, pick up the phone and have these folks at USS come out. 615-227-2275. That's 227-2275. You can check them out on their website, USSTN.com. That's USSTN.com. As they promise, we guarantee our best. Call USS. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase on this Tuesday afternoon. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe with you. We've played you David Poyle's presser. David Poyle then introduced John Hines, who is the new head coach, third head coach in this franchise's history. And now it's going to be on display tonight here at Bridgestone Arena. One game homestand, and then this team will hit the road. And quite honestly, that might not be a bad idea for this team to go out on the road for a little bit with a new coach, because there's no distractions, right? You don't go home and you're out on the road. And so there's no better time to get to know each other than on the road. And I know it's going to be a little bit different with – now, wait a minute. Help me with this. Thursday night is NBC Sports Network. But are you guys working that night?
We are. We're doing the game. It's a side-by-side.
Is that a first?
No.
I don't know all the nuances of the rule. There are a certain amount of games you can take.
Okay.
Exclusive window. And beyond that, you can do what we're doing on Thursday. We can do our broadcast alongside theirs.
So you guys will be working at the United Center.
Yeah, we're doing the game. You will see our broadcast on Thursday night here. But going back to what you're saying, the road-home balance is starting to balance back out. By the time the All-Star break hits, I think actually after the home-heavy first part of the schedule, it will balance back the other way, and it's actually more of a home-heavy schedule in the second half or the post-All-Star break.
February and March.
And I do think – so I was hinting at this before. Rob Scuderi joins the staff as well. So it's he and Coach Hines come in. They will – implement, and of course Rob Scuderi has been with this organization throughout the season, so he's familiar with what's been going on, but he gives you that former player perspective, communication style. He's a defenseman, which I think will be an important tool, how maybe he can help get the most out of the defensive part of the game. But the thing that jumped out at me at Coach Hines' press conference, and by the way, excellent questions asked, I think, up and down. From a lot of different people, a lot of different angles. I thought it was very well done. I thought he handled himself very, very well. I don't know what it's going to mean when he actually addresses the team, but I thought he was prepared.
Well, he said he addressed him this morning and would do it again before the game, obviously.
Well, yeah. No, he addressed the team this morning. He did. And I talked to a couple of the guys. It was not very long. And as he said, he is not going to come in and say, you got to do this, this, and this tonight. You know, the assistant coaches basically are going to run the game plan. They're not going to change a whole lot of what they have been doing. They just played, you know, a game 48 hours ago. So you're not going to have drastic changes. But what I heard him say in his viewpoint over time here, and I think it's very important to note, you have six games, then you have an All-Star break. So there's a process. And I think your goal would be, if I'm John Hines, that by the end of the All-Star break, coming out, my team is ready to play the system that he wants to implement, the tweaks of whatever he wants to come in there. Yeah. And so the thing that jumped out at me in the press conference was when he was asked about, okay, what is your system, basically? Yeah. He goes, I want attack. I want creativity offensively. But when you don't have the puck, you have to play with some structure. And I think that is – yep. Going to be more of his mindset is when they don't have the puck, what little tweaks do they make? Will there be maybe a little bit more structure, a little different structure than what was there before? Because I think it's important to note that for 5.5 years, really for 5 years, there was not a whole lot of complaining about the overall structure and game plan, right? It was working, but it just has not been as clean this year. David Poile pulled no punches when he was asked about those things in his part of the press conference. So I think that's the goal. Try to smooth out the game and get that goals against average down without sacrificing the attack and the ability to succeed offensively.
Yeah, I mean, look, that part has definitely been lacking. I mean, we can only keep saying when the goaltender issues come up of the play in front, right? I mean, some of it does rely on the goalies, but also we can only keep talking about the play in front of them so many times. I mean, UC Soros, I know people don't want to hear this. I get it. But if it wasn't for UC Soros, Sunday night, that thing is almost over in the first period.
Oh, absolutely.
It could have easily been 4-1 Ducks after period one. Easy.
And after two, I think it easily could have been 8-2.
Yes.
I mean, they had given up, 35 shots?
36 shots.
36 after two?
21 and 15 were the shot totals in the first two periods. 21 and 15, and they had 4 and 10.
And probably about 10 odd man rushes, a bunch of four power plays.
Yep.
It was quality as well as quantity. Now, most of the time this year, it has been quality that they've given up, not as much quantity. And I think that will be part of where they try to attack structure-wise, is to try to limit the quality that they're giving up. And that ties into the goalies. The goalie stats don't look good, right? Some of that, I think they would both tell you that, hey, they got to be better, right? But also put them in a better position to succeed by not giving up as much quality in the defensive zone.
Well, and something that really hasn't been brought up, I brought this up when you were, because you had to talk to John Hines after the press conference. That'll be for television purposes tonight and actually for radio purposes for us. So you will hear that interview in our pregame show tonight. But I brought this up with Chase. You know, we talked about for an entire season how they needed to clean up penalties. And they wrapped up their regular season being the most penalized team in the league. This year, the penalty kill. But that year, the penalty kill, it didn't bite them, right? All those penalties did not hurt them because they were so excellent on the penalty kill. But still, they were the most penalized team in the league. Well, they're right back at it. They're going to the box all the time. And the difference is the penalty kill hasn't been exceptional. So I do wonder if that is a point of emphasis that I didn't hear get brought up by either the general manager or the new head coach of maybe cleaning up their penalties and trying to stay out of the box more.
They got to play with more discipline. They just have to.
Well, especially if you don't have a lights-out penalty kill. I mean, sometimes I think you, if you feel really confident in your penalty kill, maybe you have the green light to be a little more aggressive and be a little – take a few more risks defensively, knowing that, hey, okay, if I hook a guy or if I get too physical and they call me for roughing, we'll kill it off. But when you are struggling on the penalty kill, you don't have that mindset. You can't afford to have that mindset. In terms of time shorthanded, the Predators are about middle of the road. They're 12th in the amount of times they go into the box per game, 3.2. Actually tied for the 11th most. So it's come up here recently. So it's been the best of both worlds for the opposition. Predators are taking a few more penalties, and they've had too many games where they've given up two, three, or more power play goals.
All right, we will come back. For the first time today, we will actually switch gears to kick off the fourth and final hour. We'll talk to Trent Dilfer. Okay, there's a game this weekend, Titans and Ravens. He knows a little bit about Titans and Ravens. We'll talk with Trent Dilfer. On the other side, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game.
This is Danielle Fischel.
And Ryder Strong from Pod Meets World.
When you have 5 and 7-year-old boys, I can promise you they love superheroes.
Oh, it never goes away. Indy is 11 years old and he's obsessed with comics, cartoons, video games, all of it.
Adler and Keaton both have Spider-Man costumes, and if anything says Marvel on it, they are in.
Same. Which is why we love Lingo Kids. They have Marvel Spider-Man activities that are totally age-appropriate.
And safe, made just for the little ones.
Plus, Disney's Moana, Frozen, Zootopia, all the characters your kids already love, and a few you're secretly hoping they'll get into.
I just load up the iPads with Lingo Kids before a trip, and with over 4,000 interactive activities, songs, and shows, it keeps their attention for hours.
Download Lingo Kids for free or go all in with Lingo Kids Plus for even more incredible content.
Choose the yearly plan and save up to 60%. Search Lingo Kids in the App Store or Google Play.
Lingo Kids, everything kids love.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.